One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome back to TVI Podcast.
Hi.
Hi, Carl here.
Julian here, mate. Hi.
We are back with a lovely fun episode we recorded last week. It's been in the can.
Yeah.
It's with the excellent Rob Mulholland, who is a stand-up comedian.
He's a good human, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He's a good guy. Funny man. Does YouTube stuff. He's good. He's got a lot of strings to his bow, as Rob.
He's got an excellent setup, like camera and that, isn't he?
He has, actually. And he's got a good work ethic.
He's one of these comics who's prolific,
turns over a lot of material. He's actually just released on YouTube a sort of coronavirus special that he recorded when we were in sort of... when gigs were shut, but you could do other things outdoors. Him and some other comics did these gigs where they went around and they did them in people's gardens and all that. And he sort of has compiled it all together into a special, which is now available on YouTube. So go and give that a watch. And that's it. Just kick back.
Relax. Earphones on.
Thanks to all our patrons for being a part of the gang. Well done.
Patrons. Part of the community.
Yeah, sign up if you want extra stuff. You know, we do little extra episodes. We do about, I'd say probably we average about 6 to 8 extra mini episodes a month. You get all the videos of the podcast, whatever. You know, it's worth it. So kick back, enjoy Rob Mulholland, and we'll speak to you soon.
I'm just really into late 90s shagging.
Okay, hit record. So that would be the opening line of this week's episode.
I was talking about the age demographic.
Welcome back to TVI. Carl Donnelly here.
Julian Dean, TVI. Welcome.
Guest Rob Mulholland, all the way from where do you live?
I live in Manchester now.
Manchester. Yeah. Greater Manchester. Centre, outside, what area?
Medium. I live in Medium Manchester. Levensham in South Manchester. Okay. Yeah, so it's like nearly Stockport, but it's still Manchester.
Okay. Stockport is a shithole, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. It's an absolute fucking dump.
Right, yeah. I'm not saying that to dig it out. I'm not saying that as some sort of poncy southerner, but... You know, I've got loads of mates in Manchester. It's probably, I'd say, outside of London, Manchester's the only other city in England I could live in. Like, I love it. But I went to Stockport about a year ago for the first time, and even I was like, this is a good old-fashioned shithole.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the proper northern shitholes. There's just a belt of them across the north.
It's amazing.
Like Bury and Burnley and Blackburn. Yeah.
It's one thing the north does best. Like, what I mean is, and this again, this sounds worse than I mean it, but because I think there's always that north-south divide is a bit of a myth, because I think a lot of northerners have this assumption that everyone in London is fucking minted, and we've got some of the poorest fuckers in the world, like not in the world, but in the sort of, you know, in the UK, and so as a progressive modern,
they still have like Sky Plus though.
But yeah, that's the same for like everywhere. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I grew up with people who, you know, my parents still have an electric and gas meter where they've got to top up with a key. You know what I mean? They just live in a shitty little council flat. You know, they're poor. There's no sort of rich Londonness to them. But what I will say about that is in the north, the different level is they can make a whole area a shithole. I mean, in sort of the south, it'll be a shithole next to a nice bit. But the north will really pack a big area of a shithole.
Oh yeah, you could get a good volume. Like if you head towards Barrow in Furness,
200 square miles of shit.
Yeah, if you drive towards Barrow, there is just an expanse that is just shithole after shithole after shithole. Like yeah, it's not like there's the posh area around there. Yeah,
well, but again, that's probably population density down south. It's got to be like that because we're all there's fucking during the like working week. There's 10 million people in London, so
yeah.
You know, it's obviously going to have to... You've got to put the shitholes on top of the good bits. Whereas in the north, you get to spread your seed. You can really, really spread your legs in a shithole.
Yeah, stretch out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're also trying to... because the council estates kind of were hotbeds of crime, weren't they, when they were first built, like 70s, 80s?
Yeah.
Like that one in North London where PC Blakelock got murked. Do you remember that? That was in Winston Silcock.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a real place.
No, Winston Silcott's the name of the guy that got arrested.
Right, okay. I was going to say, it was down the road in Winston Silcott.
But they do have, you always see like funny named estates in London, man. They just name them after any old fucker, innit?
Yeah.
Sort of. But like when you see Only Fools and Horses, that sort of Nelson Mandela estate. That's what they're all called, things like that. You just walk
past. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that around here, actually. Like there's a lot of a lot of places are named after places in North Yorkshire. It's either civil rights leaders or just Dales is what you get around here.
Because Manchester still, it is getting like, even like the sort of the dodgy parts. They've started to get a bit.
It's
more
getting gentrified at a rate, Manchester. It's like it's changing fast.
That sort of south. What's the bit where?
You think of Moss Side?
Moss Side, yeah.
Yeah, like Moss Side was dead bad, but it's like it's right next to Chorlton, so it's like gonna be the next up and coming area. They're already rebranding it.
It's like blooming like little vegan calf blossoms.
Yeah,
there's
like a big Aldi that's nice now, and like this, the gun crime rates have gone down, and like they've rebranded it now. Like I went to look at them when I was moving here. There was, what did they call it? I can't remember the name. They call it like the Rush Home Valley or something.
Well, there's.
What's that?
So they've rebranded it, so it's like the Rush Home Valley or something like that instead of Moss Side. Yeah, yeah. And it's like I turned up, I was like, this is fucking Moss Side.
I joke about where I live in Harlesden in London. Like Harlesden is still pretty rough, and like it used to be the gun capital of the UK for a period of time. It was basically like here and Hackney were the two worst parts of London.
Yeah, yeah. And we're competing with Nottingham and Manchester holding it up for the north.
Yeah, yeah. But Harlesden is still like it's never really kicked on. It's not been gentrified or anything yet. It's still just nice and like old school. But for a joke, I refer to it as West Kensal, because Kensal Green and Kensal Rise is the next bit, and that's well nice and posh. Yeah. Like mad. Like if you walk from my place, if you walk 200 meters down, there's a road called Bathurst Gardens, which is just a nice little residential road, and like here. You know, here would be thought of as a shit. I know people that would avoid this area like the plague. You walk 200 metres down there and a 3-bedroom house is about £1.2 million.
Yeah.
Like, that is insane.
Yeah.
Like that sort of distance should not work in any way. And also, they're not big houses with big gardens or anything. It's a little sort of just terraced, nice road.
Nah, it's a madness, man. Like, although looking at us three, we are like the foot soldiers of gentrification. Like, if we've moved into an area, like, you know, it's like I'm always one down the line. I'm a former art student. Like, you know, house prices are rising if I've moved in.
Well, the thing is, I always feel like, I know it sounds like a wanker's thing to say, but I always feel like I've got a sort of get out of jail free card that, you know, basically I'm middle class, but because I ain't from middle class. But like, you know, I'm from a poor family.
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm allowed to do whatever I want and no one can judge me. You know what I mean? When somebody, I'm a vegan, I'm fucking pretty much a Buddhist, I meditate, you know, I listen to classical music in the morning. Like, I'm a wanker, right? But anyone says to me, like, you know, I'm sort of, and at the moment anyone tries to dig me out about like gentrification or something, I'm like, shut up, man.
I'm exactly the same. Grew up on a council estate, you know, Yorkshire lad, but now I'm a teetotal vegetarian. Yeah. I'll pop on a bit of yoga in the morning with Adrienne.
She is so fit.
Yeah, I know, mate. It really helps the lessons go by.
Have you watched it, Julian? Yoga with Adrienne?
Just sitting there wanking while.
I haven't, no.
She honestly, she's like the biggest online yoga teacher in the world now, which I've actually been watching her since back in the day, mate. Before
I'm fucking OG. Talk about being a hipster. No, mate, actually, honestly, I was into Adrian's early stuff.
You were Carl was her first viewer.
No, but I've been into it. I've been wanking on about that for years on this bloody, even from the old podcast. I used to sort of always go on about yoga of Adrian. And now she's
where's she
huge.
From? Is she? She's American,
she's from Austin, Texas. She's an actor, but she's now a professional yoga teacher.
Yeah, you can't call her an actor. Like, well, that's not her, on her IMDb, yoga's popping up first.
But basically, it was one of them things where she was an actor who probably wasn't getting a lot of stuff. Was also, soft she trained as a yoga teacher, and then she started teaching it. And next
just doing
you know,
yoga on Channel 5.
11
late
PM
night.
After Euro trash, whatever
yoga
it was. I used
extreme.
To show.
Request which yoga moves she does. If you phone
can
in.
You do a downward dog.
What was
that's
the
it,
thing?
That downward dog. That's it. Lotus. That's it. That's
what was the show that used to be on like midnight on Channel 5? Was it Sexcetera? Do you remember that?
Oh, God. The ones where they pretended it was an education program.
Yeah, it was like, here's some sex news from around the world. And it was like, just you'd be sitting there 15, like, fucking go on, tell me some more news.
But then, like, because they
tell me about the vulva.
They try and pretend it was educational. So, you everyone watching must have been us, like 15-year-old boys.
Absolutely.
But then they'd go, right, we're now going to look at suicide in the gay community. Yeah, like, well, you know, just like, oh, mate, come play the game.
I've got a rod on.
Yeah, hold that back.
Yeah, can we just get back to like showing medical diagrams of fannies and watching GIMP swing upside down?
That was a golden time.
It really was. Like, so I'm 32, so I was very much in that pre-internet era
just about,
of masturbation.
Yeah,
just we had a computer in my house when I was a teenager, but it was in the living room and it was on dial-up.
Yeah.
You know, so like that was when I was like 13 as well. So like. It was late night Channel 5 for me,
that,
man.
That was the best. Channel 4, you'd have Euro Trash, you'd have Sexcetera. There was just like a handful of... There was the Red Shoe Diaries.
Yeah, the 10-minute previews.
Oh, God. I remember that. It's like... young people now, I know it sounds like such an old person thing to say. They don't know
the barn with all the porno they've got.
They can watch... I mean, you know, Julian's the expert, the UK's leading expert on porn.
What would you like to know? What...
the UK's archivist. You're like the British Library of porn, aren't you?
Let me just get that one up for you.
A lot of stolen Egyptian stuff.
Just like, pull that file up.
Wolves, like Minority Report. You just got screams.
Like A Beautiful Mind, but with cuck porn vids. Amateur three ways.
I genuinely think that was a good thing for us, you know. I genuinely, I know this is like an old man
thing. I mean,
it
destroyed the porn industry in terms of money-wise, didn't it? Like, they used to be like... rich man and then
and that was the only thing that made up for the fact that they were doing that shit.
I mean there is a sympathy. It was also a sort of a weird, I often look at that and think, when you hear about when comedians moan about new gigs starting up and for less money, or you know, whenever there's a development in comedy where you know the old guard suddenly go, oh fuck, you know, you can't make
ruining comedy.
And it is, but I get what they're saying because it's happened in loads of other industries, and you know, porn would be a good
look
at and say, look, they had it. There was that 90s golden era of porn where like they were making. I remember there being the first $1 million movie being made, like budget wise. And then, you know, just look now, it's all webcam stuff. I think that, you know, it's just totally dwindled down to being a very...
Like Ron Jeremy and people. It's funny when these big porn stars like saw themselves as like real actors as well.
Isn't Ron Jeremy?
Like, he'd try and get into like Hollywood films thinking... it's because of your dick stays hard for 8 hours.
No one cares about your face, mate.
All right, I'm thinking Ron Jeremy is now...
He got only does seven.
Sexual assault or something. I think he's now on the
Ron
band,
Jeremy being cancelled.
I think he has got cancelled.
Oh, well, I mean, there goes my childhood.
It's always the ones you least expect, isn't it? The little dirty looking porn.
Well, like that was like that has definitely happened in porn the same way as comedy. But I would say like porn people deserve their money to stay more than the comedians from the 90s, because the porn people have done new shit since the 90s. They're not just flogging the same video they've been doing for 30 years.
Yeah, you know, we're not doing fucking 15 minute open spots while getting double ended.
Exactly, they've got a difficult job.
No, some of us are, mate. All right.
Sign up to our Patreon to see Julian's tricks.
Fucking some prop comedians.
Stage time, mate. Some of these promoters run a tight ship.
Mate, after COVID, people are going to come back with some angles. People are going to be like, fuck mate. It, I'm going to do what I've always thought about.
That's it. I'm going to be the guy. See the comedian that just does it with his dick out? The whole time. Doesn't mention it. It's just out.
It just does bits about aeroplane food. No reference.
Just a knob just flapping around.
Starts getting hard on the encore.
Just as the set goes on, it just increases in size.
Better than gig.
Just finish off with a little windmill. See you later. Good night, everybody.
God. But it is, I mean, ultimately, and that is the sad truth of, not the sad truth of COVID, that's probably all the dead people. But
I think the sad truth is all the dead people.
The sad truth of COVID is that some of us are going to have to now work harder at stand-up. But, you know, the stand-up circuit is definitely going to contract. It is, you know, not every gig's going to reopen. Fees are going to be down. So it is going to be harder, especially for newer comics. Mm. And, like, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting couple of years, I think, that we're in for with a... comedians like scrabbling around for work.
I think it's great in a lot of ways.
After the financial crisis, though, they it normally booms stuff like that. I think, you know, for every gig that shuts, there's going to be one that opens anyway, I think.
But it will totally be for agree. Less money, is what I mean. Like the actual fact.
Yeah.
Some of them will be, but some of them will be for more because, like, there's going to be a huge shift over the next few years. And I think, like, comedians are going to get more power because we build our own shit. We have our own audiences, and promoters aren't the ones selling the tickets anymore in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that is.
So
definitely...
we're going to be able to demand more fees because we're going to be the ones. If people are coming to see, you know, the guys from this podcast or whatever, you're in more of a position to charge more, aren't you? So I think there's going to be a lot of that. But yeah, there will be a lot of like smaller boutique-y nights that'll be nicer, you know? And I think there will be genuinely good things to come of this. Well, and like, we're not going to be the first off the boat. Like, we're not the ones who need to worry. No. It's the middle ground comedians. It's the ones who were clinging on before. Those are the ones who are going to be fucked.
And sometimes, they were due getting culled anyway, so.
We've all had the conversation in green rooms.
We've talked about that on here before, you know, like you can always tell a sort of let's be quite brutal and say a shit comedian when they
it's not bring me into it, man. You know what I mean?
I'm just gonna mute Julian. but no, do you know when they come off? You've watched them just have a gig that you would have been like. You would have been driving home with you, like shaking your head, going,
pulling over just to think about it on the hard shoulder.
And they come off and they've got a big grin on their face and they come into the dressing room. Shadow boxing. Nice. They were nice, weren't they? And you're like, fucking hell, mate. What is your standard for a decent gig?
That's it. But like that's how they get by, though, because I always wondered, like, how do they survive? Because like comedy's so brutal if you shit at it. You get told straight away, the audience makes you feel horrible and you deserve it because you've been rude. Because you've asked for everyone's attention and then you've been shit. It's really rude. It's really rude to do that.
I've never thought about
it. It is rude, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got no manners, mate.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So you deserve slapping down. But then, like, so I was always like, how do they cope with that? They just don't notice. That's what it is. They don't realise how badly they're doing.
It's a disassociation of
yeah, and they've not felt the top tier. They've not felt what it's like to actually rip a room.
But that's the problem is, I think, their standards are based on their own standards rather than, I think, you know, you can't, the whole idea of, I'm not saying you've got to compare yourself to others, but
you do a bit.
You do a bit on a
crowd
night.
Reaction, you can.
On a
you,
night, you can tell if you've had the best gig.
Looks like.
Yeah, you can tell if you've had the worst gig, definitely. Like, so, you know, always, everyone can have a bad gig. I'm not saying that, but like, you know, if you're consistently not. Come on, mate.
Never had a bad one. Never had less than a 10.
Out of a 1,000.
Except in time, because you always just run under.
Oh, yeah. Or a 9.
But basically, yeah, how can you not have noticed if you're a comedian who's constantly on the lower end of how well you did in the room? And you can't always get away with saying, well, you know, this is not really my sort of room. It's like, well...
One of them's got to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do think there needs to be more people that are self-aware of their. I suppose it's a self-awareness of your position, but that's hard, isn't it, to accept. There's an ego thing where it's very hard to accept this is my place.
I know, but we need to tell them. This is the thing. Everyone's too polite. But... we need to be like, mate, that was shit.
Do you reckon that... should we get that live
when
comedy association?
When fresh off the stage at their most sensitive. You know when you walk off?
Yeah. Just right at that moment before you say anything, you just got to front it out and just go, mate, that was terrible. Give up.
It's
that
hard, though.
It's awful. No, my plan for this, though, you know how every year we do the Comedians Comedian Award and we all vote for, you know, the circuit comedian who's sort of been overlooked, a hero? It's
I've
a great
never
thing.
Voted for it at all.
Every year we should vote someone out. As well,
yeah.
We should just vote. We should all vote. Whoever gets the most votes, you're out of comedy. Sorry,
oh, most overrated.
That'd be fucking funny.
Person, we've almost.
And because it's not going to be, it's not going to be low end. Like it's not going to be open spots because they're still you. Everyone, we accept that people had sort of.
You've got to start shit. You start shit. That's how it works.
But it's the people that anyone who's been around for longer than I'd say. Let's give them a good chunk because I know some, I've seen comedians
six
that I
years
saw.
Or something
I
reckon, like
I was
that,
say, I've seen open spots be dog shit and then see them 5 years later and actually have been like they've got really improved. But you know, let's give them six, or maybe 7 or 8 years just to really give them. Unless you know they might have had a busy job, they couldn't gig much. 8 years in, if you're just still kicking around, I reckon you get in. You're in for a boot.
There's a guy in the north we call the triple electrician because he's been going long enough he could have qualified as an electrician 3 times.
Oh, that's brutal.
And should have done.
There
does come a point where it's like, come on, you've got to understand that this isn't happening. And then they're still going, how do I get on this gig? Fucking don't.
This is the thing. There is definitely, there is a place though for people that just like doing it as a hobby.
Yeah, totally. But it's not on pro bills on a Friday night, you know?
No, I suppose. But if they genuinely just, if they're just getting booked because they're, you know... I suppose it's up. Then it's up to the bookers. The bookers have to be a bit more.
People hassle bookers, don't they, to get booked, and that's how they. I've seen careers on that. They just hassle.
My old agent did that in his career, so I hired him.
That's so good. This is how little I hassle bookers. I did when I was brand new, like 2005, 2006. I did an open spot at the Bearcat in Twickenham, and did really well. And they said, "Oh, give us a shout. We'll book you in." I emailed them about 2 weeks later. Didn't get a reply. Have never played the club again because I didn't want to hassle them. That's a genuine thing. They got in touch with me about a month ago to do a gig in February, and I was like, "Oh, fucking finally!
I'm back into the Bearcat, baby."
But I genuinely, it was the fact they didn't reply to an email. I was like, "Oh, they probably think I'm shit, and just I'm not going to hassle them." So that was genuinely my thought process, and I've just never got around to emailing them again. So like I don't understand
like
these
that.
People that would do a gig and then just be like, when can I have a gig? Can I have a gig every fucking month or every week?
Yeah, I can't do that, man. Like,
it's
I'm
like they know
waiting
where you are,
come.
Don't they? It's like if they want you, they'd ask.
Yeah, like you look, every now and again, if I've not worked for someone for ages, I'll message them and go, hey, I'm still a thing, but like really rarely.
Who do you think you fucking are?
Yeah.
Have like, a few beers,
I've got
an
your
angry
kids.
Text.
No, like I've definitely been on that end where I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna fucking beg.
Exactly. Like, I just always assume. I always assume if they've not replied to an email, well, they think I'm shit, and that's the end of that. Then that'll do. I can live with that.
Yeah, like that's you've got to be able to live with that, innit?
I know.
Like, I always think like and if someone does think I'm shit, I'm like, they'll see me in a bit and realise I'm not. I'm like, fuck it.
Well, there's always that. Yeah, I mean, that's. I just think it's. It's a hard one, but I was going to say that live comedy association thing. We should get them to have a HR department where you can actually just go to them and say, look, they're like, have you got a complaint about sort of sexual misdemeanors? You're like, no, I'd like to complain about somebody being dog shit, please.
The problem is,
revoke their license.
The problem is, everyone on the fucking board's a dog shit comedian.
I suppose there is that. I mean, that is the thing. They're not. You're not gonna.
I don't know who's on the board. But
I can't remember who is anymore. But I'm gonna fucking cuss them out anyway.
But it's not gonna be like if you're a busy jobbing comedian and you've got loads of other stuff on. You're not.
It's not Kevin Bridges. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he's not gonna sign up to be a board member of a fucking.
It just feels not-for-profit
organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I do think that it'd be nice to have. You know, I do think that what they're trying. I do think they're trying to do the right thing. I think it's a good idea, but yeah. I don't trust comedians enough to ever think it will have much of an impact.
It's not even the comedians I worry about. You know, like with that group, like it was a. You know, it's the thing. I don't trust it at all because it was set up without comedians and then comedians were brought in as an afterthought. Like there was publicists on the board before there was a comedian involved.
That, but they are, I mean, that is part of the comedy world. I do
the problem
think
with, the problem with
a bit
that
of an
is,
ego about this. And like, actually, yeah, like there are we're a big, like, you know, it's a, there's a symbiotic relationship between everyone.
Not with PRs though. PRs are parasitic. That's the difference. PRs actively work against everyone who doesn't pay for them.
Yes.
PRs have been a massive barrier in my career, actually. And they have held people like me and people with less privilege than me back on my entire career. And the fact that they're considered an integral part of comedy, that this barrier, this shortcut for rich people is integral to comedy, fuck off, it's not. Comedy would be better without all of them. If PRs left, comedy would carry on just fine, but better.
But do you not think...
I think Edinburgh, it's dying a bit, isn't it, the PR thing?
I think so,
good.
Yeah. But PR as a thing... It's just advertising, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's more that it's the way they work specifically within the comedy industry. I don't think PR is inherently a bad industry, and I don't think PRs are inherently bad. I think the way they work within the current comedy industry that is dying and will move out has been bad.
I find it impossible to give a shit about. Like, you know what I mean? It's almost like when people talk about class in comedy. Mm. Which I know is something you've discussed, and something like it should be something that really bothers me. But you know, I can't give a shit. I genuinely find it hard.
It did bother me more when I first started, particularly when I really like ran into those walls. I was like, because I was like, you know, like I was dead arrogant about it. I was like, I'm dead funny. I'll be fine. I'll fucking fly through. I'll be on telly in 2 weeks. And then I just hit this wall of what the industry is. And I was like, oh, fuck, right. This is closed to me. So I got really angry about it. But now I've just realized there's a little way you can just walk around that wall and just make your own shit and you don't need it. So I worry about it a lot less now. Like,
I also think like in terms of the discussions, also forget that when people say, like, you know, obviously TV producers, there's never been, TV production has never been an industry that hasn't been middle class and upper middle class, right? It's always been. Yeah. So that's never shocked me. And then, you know, in terms of comedy being quite a middle class endeavour, you know, it's sort of all the alternative comedians came out of the best universities, all that. They all were part of a sort of, they came out of Footlights and all things like that. That's just the way it was. So I've always just thought it's a posh person thing, and just anyone who does it, that I just think we're sort of outliers. That's why I suppose I've never ever felt like it's a major issue. So I just thought it was like the rest of society, innit? It's weighted towards wealthy.
Oh yeah, it's not like it's a thing unique to us. You know, like there's a load of issues within comedy that people treat as comedy issues that are societal issues we actually look at. Like, we actually examine and kick off about. That's the difference, I think.
I suppose. I just always find, like, the discussions get done every year, especially around Edinburgh time and all that. And I always think, like, this is literally just society.
And every year at Edinburgh, someone puts a microphone in my face and we talk for an hour and then they pick out the 2 minutes where I've kicked off about class in comedy. It happens every fucking year and I'm not doing it anymore.
That was a really good speech thing. What you said, I thought.
I was pleased with that, and the reaction was great. I did a big kickoff, either last year or the year before, I can't remember, but like with like Joe, and it went like mini viral, and it was dead funny though, because like I spent the rest of the festival walking around with like TV producers and that giving me daggers.
Oh really?
Yeah, man. I walked into like the Dave party to go pick up my mate. I wasn't hanging about because I fucking hate those parties. I walked in and I just saw daggers. It's fucking hilarious. Like, you know, I've never coveted anything like that, and that's the thing. Like, you've got to realize that. Those things only really affect you if you want what they've got to give, and I don't want to be on panel shows.
Or if you let it affect you, same as anything in life.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
Sometimes I think that's what my thing is. I just don't really let anything bother me.
I'm trying. I'm a real angry dude, but I'm trying. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to do that a lot more. I'd be a bit more
read
zen.
Read some Buddhist teachings, mate. That's the thing. It's all, you know, if you're upset, you're upset. They ain't changing nothing, innit?
I mean, the model of an Edinburgh is difficult, isn't it, for someone who hasn't.
But it's always, again,
like,
it's always been
fun.
The case. The fact that it's got easier with things like the Free Fringe is a development.
The Free Fringe is good, yeah.
Yeah, but there wasn't the Free Fringe like 15, 20 years ago. It used to be even more of a closed shop.
Yeah.
But it was also
when it was more of a closed shop, it was also a lot smaller, and it was a lot easier for that big investment to pay off. You know, it was a lot easier for you to actually get somewhere. If you're one of 200 comedians, it's a lot easier to make an impact when you're one of 3,000, now. Yeah. You know,
again, that's our fault for all wanting to do it, isn't it?
This is it. You are right. Things have got better, but they were really fucked in the past. And the way the industry's transforming now, though, it's fucking beautiful. Like, everything's becoming way more egalitarian. You can just make your own shit. Mo Gilligan got a Netflix special out of Ultimately. He started off just filming himself on his phone.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like that. That's,
let's be honest, very funny videos. I love his. It's so funny, man.
And that's it. Like, now, if you are funny as fuck and you have a phone, you can make it online, and like that's awesome. So that's the fucking future, and that's why I've detached from like the industry sort of side of comedy. Don't need to do it anymore. You just don't need to engage with that. So now, if you are like, now you won't catch me complaining about the Fringe and that, because like I just won't do it if I don't need to anymore. There's no necessity there, so fuck it.
Do you think, though, that this is, again, and this isn't trying to be like devil's advocate, this is
you love this shit.
I don't, mate.
You're the Colleen Nolan of this podcast.
Loose men.
Is there a danger? I suppose the answer is probably, I'm going to answer it myself, but saying now everyone can bypass it will open it up for dog shit to be successful. As much as I'm saying, like, you know, obviously
there's an audience for it and people are liking it.
But, you know, you see like TikTok or something like that. You open TikTok and it's basically a billion people doing the same joke and one gets
people lip syncing stand up, man. And it's huge. And you don't need talent to be successful on TikTok.
That's what I mean. This is the thing with, even though there was issues with the model of comedy and going through Edinburgh and all that, and people moan about somebody getting on fucking Mock the Week and they've only been going a few years, but they're still going to be of a level that is better than other people that have been going a few years. And, you know, they're still going to have proven themselves at gigs, then at Edinburgh. You know, even if it might not be what you like or whatever, there was a quality control, whereas the zero quality control and just some person ripping people off and doing some dog shit ideas on TikTok and getting famous, you're allowing total dog shit to become really popular.
Yeah, but you're allowing everything that chance, and that's just sort of the price you pay. Whereas before it was like all the comedians competing for 6 spots on a panel show. Now you can have 100 people have a successful career, and you know most of them will be shit.
But they'll still be less successful than some bloke.
But if there's an audience for it, it means that people like it, doesn't it? So
but people are fucking morons.
That's what I mean. Basing anything on public opinion has always been.
Yeah. But it's the public's right to see what they want, isn't it? Whether we like it or not. Fashion or music. You know, the most popular song in the world would probably be like some shit pop song, wouldn't it, or whatever.
This is it.
And I'll have it on in my car, mate.
You love a bit of dog shit.
That's the future, mate. I'm like, this is the problem. Like, right now, I am bored of being a video editor. I never wanted to be this. Like, this is the downside of the other route in comedy, is you've got to learn to do a lot of shit yourself
it. That is the problem, actually, is I think.
Yeah, because I'm now a graphic designer, a video editor, and all this sort of shit, and it's constant, and it's a load of work. But the end goal is complete freedom. It's complete creative freedom. It's complete control of your career. So it's, you know, it's worth the graft, but it's fucking knackering. I'd spend every day just making clips and shit. It's boring.
Yeah, yeah.
I never wanted to have a fucking desk job, and I've kind of ended up with one.
But
at
that's
the moment.
It, isn't it? That's what I've always been like. That's also the way with like a lot of comedians like who get super successful. Actually, I've got a few mates that, you know, became massive, and their lives are great. You know, they're making loads of money, but ultimately they ended up. Their workload got to a point where it felt like a real job, which is the opposite to what I got into. I got into comedy because I fell in love with it when I first saw it, and then I was like, I want to do that. And it felt like some sort of travelling fucking Wilbury thing where you just show up in a town and make some funnies and then go home. And to me, I've always just sort of felt like, oh, fuck, now that they've made it look like work.
Kevin Hart's a CEO rather than a comedian, isn't he? He's the perfect example. To be fair, did you say this was so fucking funny? You know, Kevin Hart's got a new special out that he filmed in his living room, right? It's called It's called No Fucks Given, right? Someone tweeted without tagging Kevin Hart that they thought it was shit. And he like quote tweeted it going like, yeah, well, fucking blah, blah, blah. Mate, you called your special No Fucks Given. You can't be searching for your own name after that. you can't be doing that.
It's the old Ricky Gervais thing,
isn't it? I don't care what people think.
Ricky Gervais is the king of that, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Google
alerts, what you think. Kevin Hart.
Here's everyone's complaints about me and why they're wrong.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks, except I've got a Google fucking alert for every time somebody tweets about me.
I know, man.
I find it fascinating. I know, but there's certain I always find that's
what drives them in a way, I guess.
That's it. Because you'd think there's got to be a point where you give up on that. Can you not just be successful enough that you genuinely don't care what people that don't like you?
Yeah, just like tweet at me in my mansion. Give a fuck.
It's the old Jason Manford's got a great bit. He hasn't that used to like years ago. He used to have it.
Do remember this? Yeah,
the football bit where it's people say like
50 grand a week, you can shout what you want at me.
People go, it's really horrible when people swear at comedians. He'd be like, he'd be on the pitch for an hour afterwards, just clapping, going, "Yep, just keep shouting it, guys. You should see my mum's house."
No, totally. I totally believe that. I would like to think I'd get to that. I mean, I already don't give a fuck, but like, you know, sometimes a comment will get you. Sometimes you'll see something where you're like, oh, just fuck off. The ones that annoy me the most are like never the ones where they're like, oh, you're a fucking stupid cunt, you shit, whatever. Because I don't care. Like, that's just someone who doesn't.
Julian's late night.
Yeah, exactly. Comments, I'm just like, all right, Julian, please. Chill out, mate.
It's you behind that avatar.
Julian's got the guts to text it straight to you, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He'll fucking phone me. We'll have it out. But like, it's the ones that annoy me are the little busybody ones where they're like, either give me advice or they're like, tell me where I've gone wrong or like, try and correct me on something. I'm just like, oh, just fuck off. I don't give a shit what you think. Like, those ones are annoying.
No, it's so fucking arrogant of them, isn't it?
Oh, actually, at 3 minutes, what I think you should have done, I think fucking drown yourself. I don't give a shit. But it happens, man. Like, and it's weird what kicks off. Like, I've been having it's weird with that. You've just got to learn to get over it, though. You've got to learn to separate and just realize all these people in the world exist. At least 70% of them will fucking hate my comedy, but 30% of them will love it, and I just need to find them. And it's a filtering process. And like every time someone comments that they fucking hate it, that's just filtering someone out. Fuck off.
Hold the herd, innit?
Yeah. I just mute, man. Like, I am so brutal with the mute button. If I see one thing I don't like from you online, you are muted. I will never see anything from you again.
I'm a big muter as well.
I love it because they're howling into the void.
During lockdown, I went on quite a ruthless comedian muting spree with any comedian that just annoyed me. Not even annoyed me. Do you know what it is? Because I'm not getting annoyed with what they're saying. But any comedian who, if I opened Twitter twice in the space of a week and I saw them do a moany tweet about something, I was like, that's it, mate. You're out.
I don't need that for online from comedians. It does piss me off when comedians online are like really unfunny and like miserable. It's like, I didn't follow you about you being depressed, did I? I followed you for jokes. I'm sorry. Like, keep that on Facebook, right? On Twitter, you got to be fucking pumping out gags. I don't give a shit about your personal life.
It's okay to not be okay.
It's fucking not if you're a comic. Be okay.
No, but I think it's okay to not be okay. I just don't think. I don't think anyone's saying otherwise. We're currently in a global pandemic, a recession. Exactly. No one is currently expecting you to be all fucking flowers.
Why be so miserable?
You have to be okay.
Yeah,
but you kind of do on the timeline. I mean, like, just filter it out of your tweets is what I'd say.
Yeah. It's your job to ultimately to entertain or try. Or just say something funny.
People treat comedians like who treat Twitter like just a diary.
Oh my God.
And they're just like, oh, I'm sad today. I had my cornflakes and then I cried watching Taggart.
Yeah.
And brilliant. Then they get loads of attention and it's like the fake Facebook posts, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sad or just
send
some
memes. I'm having a bad day. Send cat pictures.
Send cat pictures.
Google it. You're 45, mate. Into Google.
You've got kids and you're a grown up.
Go and see your kids, mate.
Honestly, I find that sort of infantilization of grown-ups where, just that inability to just... If you're sad, right, imagine you have a really bad moment. The inability to just go and have a sit down and have it out with yourself, Have a cry if you want. Fucking do whatever you want.
I'm and a crier,
with,
man.
The ability to deal with that without telling the world is like gone. Like so many people don't have that ability anymore, and it's that isn't like this whole thing about you should talk to people. I agree, you should talk to somebody. Call your mate. Call your mum. Fucking speak to a doctor.
Send a DM.
I mean, the point is
you're not
that,
talking to somebody by shouting it into the world.
And the point is, it's not that it's getting on my nerves. It's that it's not helping them.
Absolutely,
it's like putting
not.
A plaster on a bullet wound.
And also, it's creating a new problem because then they're going to associate.
They're getting attention from being sad. And it's not actually dealing with the fucking cause.
Well,
like,
it's why so many people
therapy,
now
speak to someone.
Their identity is there.
Take my number out of your phone. You know, stuff. practical,
small practical steps.
Small steps.
Never call me again.
But that idea that your mental health problems are your identity.
It's perpetuating it. Yeah,
it's so bad, man. It's so insidious online. The amount of people who are like, I'm the depressed guy. Don't be.
There is a way out of it. You know what I mean?
You're a guy who is depressed at the moment, is how you should look at it. It's not your whole thing. Like, stop.
Life isn't going great. You're a bit sad for a little while. And there is like chemical depression, but there's also, you know, options with that, isn't there? You know,
well, also, chemical depression is still fixable. Like, it's not forever. You know, your brain is a muscle. It changes over time.
This is it. Like,
sad and shit your life is, the more chance you'll get in depression because you get into that mind. Your brain is physically
sometimes
responding
tough
to the world.
Love is the best way. Just say, oh, fucking shut up.
Oh, fucking do it then. Jump. Go on.
I don't think that is the best way of communicating it, but I do think there is
I'd love to see you as like a suicide counsellor, Julian.
My mate did come to me.
Why did they choose you, of all people?
I know him very well, but he... And I said to him, I'll drive him there. I'll drive to Beachy Head. But he just laughed about it. I just made fun of it a little bit.
That can help sometimes, man.
He's like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like, that's definitely
you know,
how I deal with
that
my mates.
Care, you know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. I'd be way more depressed if someone was serious.
Poor you. I don't think it helps. It certainly wouldn't with me.
Yeah, totally. And like the sort of taboo with mental issues. And, you know, I speak someone. I was like bad depressed for years when I was like a teenager into my early 20s. You know, it's a long time ago now, but I was like peak depressed for years and years and years. And the thing that's like, I feel like there's a bit of a taboo about it is you've got to, in a way, start making a choice to start getting better with
definitely.
It. You can't just like when I improved the material circumstances of my life, I gradually got less depressed. You know, I moved out of the situation that was making me so depressed. Yeah. I got myself out of poverty. And those aren't the only causes, obviously. There is a chemical level, but they make it a lot fucking easier to be healthy if you sort those things out and like work on yourself and don't just... It was a choice I made. I went, I'm going to start getting better now. And it's not like it's a linear progress and it's not like that overnight you're fine. It's just that when you get in those pits, you go, I've got to get out of this rather than going, I'm in this forever. You know,
and you also have to have the strength of character to make a lot of the time it's an inside job, isn't it? But a lot of the time it is circumstance.
But you can
make some changes.
You've got to change it. That's the thing. Like,
but people
you know,
are addicted to whinging and being a, once they get a nice warm hug on the internet from being a victim. It's like they get addicted to that, you know what I mean? And then even when they're all right, they're on there being a victim. It's like becomes their identity.
But yeah,
and how they get attention.
That thing sometimes I've heard it said that it's insensitive to say to somebody who's depressed that they should, you know, go for a walk.
There is a time and the place just to be there with them, and
exactly, yeah.
And you know, if someone's just lost their mum.
Yeah, they go, I'll probably do a bit of exercise.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's
sort
all...
Try some meditating, mate.
Yeah. but in terms of like...
Try Headspace.
But imagine you've got a friend who's...
do some yoga, mate.
Yeah, have you heard about Adrienne?
She's fierce.
You know, there is a time and a place there is to be there with them and go there with their pain and help.
Absolutely.
And just pity them. There is a time to feel sorry for someone and they need that.
Always.
But if you
exercise right and you eat right, it will make you.
Well, that's what
better.
I mean. If you go to visit 100%. Your friend and they're depressed and their flat is it's all messy. They're sitting on the sofa all day in a dressing gown eating pizza, you know, and they're saying, "Oh yeah, I'm just too depressed
like
to go
a
out."
Good
and it's
situation.
Like, but you need to say to them, "Look, but you don't understand it."
But you're living in heaven, bro. You should see my place.
How are you depressed in here? Kicking takeaway boxes out
you
the way.
You need a PlayStation 5 is what you need.
You're totally right. I did this in the middle of like the last lockdown. I started getting really miserable. And like, obviously, look, like up at, through this, it's, you know, all bets are off. I had like, you know, peaks and troughs constantly. But in like one of the worst bits of like the first lockdown, I was waking up at like 1 in the afternoon. I was barely seeing any of the fucking day. I was eating shit. I wasn't going anywhere or doing any exercise or whatever. I started just, you know, doing a little bit and eating better, and yeah, it made me feel better.
It's amazing. 100%. Sleeping, like if somebody says they're depressed and like you ask them about their sleeping pattern, often like the it's obviously a two-way thing, and like one affects the other, and they're not sleeping, and the tiredness is always going to make their moods worse, and you know, it's just that they've got, you know, it's about trying to make your situation as, like, what's the word, sort of stress-free as possible to allow yourself to try and get out of the funk. And
obviously, like, look, it's not possible for everyone to escape the situation that makes them sad, but like there is always a little something you can be doing, just a little something, you know, and just it's about like making those steps. And yeah, I think like the discussion about mental health has become very weird, because like mental health as a, like a phrase has become so vague, and like people use it to mean sad now. People say, this is affecting my mental health. No, it's upsetting you. That is mentally healthy to be upset and by that.
It's belittling to real mental health people as well, with actual mental health.
This is it.
People's actual saying, depression.
Can't go to work today. I'm having a bad mental health day. It's like, hang on.
You're just sad today.
Did you get shit-faced last night and you feel a bit hungover? And they're like, no, obviously my mental health. You're like,
yeah,
okay.
if you did a gram of cocaine 2 days ago, don't talk to me about being depressed.
Exactly.
And look, I've been that guy. I'm not coming from a moral high ground here. But yeah, if you did a load of pingers at the weekend, yeah, you're going to be miserable on Wednesday.
Well, like when I was on antidepressants.
You're going to feel vulnerable on Wednesday.
Yeah, but I was on antidepressants for ages. And then if you actually looked at it, it's like, were you in a relationship that you weren't actually, wasn't really working, you weren't happy, with where you were living? Like there was just so many circumstances that, you know, I would sort of, if you once I sorted those out, it gave me a window of opportunity to sort of work my head out and get off medication.
I had to move away from London, was me. Like I went down to uni in London and I was like a bit isolated and I was skint and like I wasn't coping, because it turns out I had like ADHD. I had no idea at the time. So I was just like, everything was spiral. I didn't know how to fucking be. So I was just like staying in my room all day, every day reading, because I didn't have a telly and not seeing anyone. But I was like, I'm in London and I'm living the dream. And then as soon as I moved back to the north and like just chilled out for a bit, and then I had the opportunity to not be really depressed, and it got a lot better, you know. But you know, all better now. Fucking fine now.
Change is turning. That's what it's about.
Look at us being.
You gotta make a change.
Are you just gonna quote
that Michael Jackson song?
He's gone mental, everyone.
Are we going for life advice off Michael Jackson?
You do have to make a change, though.
Yeah. Michael did to the age of consent.
Oh, man, don't say that Michael Jackson's a pedo. You know, his fans are mental online still. If you mention that, people go like, do you have any evidence? I mean, I've got a hunch.
I've heard people, don't get me wrong, I think the media aspect of this might fall into this, but I've heard people, it's like when somebody has made a joke about Michael Jackson being a paedophile, has somebody said it's racist to you know, it's
to
just
which race, which about, one is he?
But also, like, you know,
racist against really white people.
My view on paedophiles is I would say almost non
colorless,
unrelated to any.
When it comes to nonces, I don't see color.
I don't. Yeah. I know that's. It's,
I mean, most nonces have been white, haven't they?
Overwhelmingly.
We have
cornered the market.
I mean, there are a few. Look, like on this, Africa Bambaataa brought one back for the black team. So, you know.
What was his.
I think his was teenagers. I think he was fiddling teenagers. I might be wrong on that.
Just want to check which. you know, is he which league he's in?
I think he is a championship he's professional, but he's not quite, you know, he's not top of the Premier League. Yeah, he's not in the
Sunday League. He's just grooming someone online. He has moved into the championship.
Yeah, but I believe he's in the professional tiers. Yeah.
Okay, cool. It is like, I mean, he's not, what's the guy from Lost Prophets?
No, oh guys. Man. Ian Watkins has built a dynasty at that club. He is the Pep Guardiola, isn't he?
He's the Mayweather.
Yeah.
Undefeated. Yeah, Jesus.
I told a story on I was on a football podcast called The Fighting Cock. It's a Tottenham podcast. It's great. Go on it now and again. I was reminded of something I did, which is, I don't know if I ever told it on here, but when I've got this t-shirt, there's a New York jazz poetry hip-hop group called the Lost Poets, right? Sounds wanky. They basically influenced,
I'm aware of them.
They influenced every hip-hop act of the last 30 years, basically. Yeah. You know, they've been going since the late 60s. And I've got a t-shirt with the Lost Poets. It's just a black t-shirt, white wording.
Man down on the back.
Looking like you as well.
But I just...
Fallen soldier written on the back.
But I walked down the street wearing this Lost Poets t-shirt on what happened to... I didn't know this. It was the day that the lead singer of the Lost Prophets got convicted of numerous counts of paedophilia. And I just kept seeing people double take at me. And
like, looks like you're a fan, like, supporting him. I still believe.
Outside court, the only one.
Ian Watkins is innocent.
And I had no idea.
Babies are rubbish anyway.
But people were looking, was lying. Man. The amount of looks I got was brutal. And I was just like, what is wrong with... I was looking in a mirror. I was checking my
hair. Baby was lying. Don't believe all babies. We've not heard his side of it. She was wearing a minion, really. She had makeup on.
Yeah, what was this baby wearing?
That's the first question.
Oh, come on now. Come on now, team.
I mean, to be honest, I think his side of the story was, yeah, I did.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he was shy about it, was he?
No, he's not a good man, I don't
think.
He's
really bad. But anyway, like, yeah, it turns out, walked down the street wearing a supportive T-shirt of him on the day he got put in prison.
Yeah, free Rolf Harris on the back of it.
But oh, the Michael Jackson thing, though, I saw a psychologist break down the evidence.
Oh, here we fucking go.
And he didn't do it. But there isn't any... I mean, he didn't get done in court, though, did he?
Yeah, but, like, just because, like, the American justice system isn't good. I don't know if you've watched any documentary on Netflix, but, yeah, like, it doesn't...
He did make
not...
multiple out-of-court settlements to which I think... you can't say... He wasn't ever convicted of anything, so I do think, you know, it is all speculation. But it's good speculation.
It's not baseless speculation.
No, it's not.
I mean, Jimmy Savile, I think, is it's a fact, isn't it?
I mean, look, he didn't get his day in court. He didn't get to defend himself.
Just because somebody didn't get their day in court. It's that thing. So, yeah, sometimes you can sort of put...
But there's overwhelming evidence for Jimmy Savile, isn't there?
Yeah.
I don't know if there is for MJ, is there?
I don't think it's as... It's not as numerous.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I mean, there's those two dancers that did the documentary, but there's been a few more taking settlements. But the settlement thing, though, it's like, that isn't... I mean, yeah, it doesn't look great, but it could also...
Lawyer or something.
I'm gonna say, to be honest with you, if you have an 8-year-old boy sleeping in your bed who isn't your child,
I mean,
I don't care if you don't fuck him, you're still a nonce. Like, at that point, if you've got an 8-year-old boy in your bed...
8-year-old boy is a pervert as well.
I think you should get some merch made up with that quote. I don't care if you don't fuck him, you're still a nonce.
At what point do you become a nonce?
I know.
Like, is it like first base? Is that like...
I agree. I think actually...
It's the thought of fucking first... It's the first millimetre.
Yeah, I think, nonce, yeah.
Isn't it?
And I don't give a
the
shit.
The one drop nonce theory.
When people say like, yeah, but you know, he was like a little boy himself. I'm like, that doesn't.
No, he
make
wasn't.
It all right.
He was an adult man with mental issues who fucked kids. Just like for someone who didn't fuck kids, he had a lot of like security and bells around his doors when he had little kids in that room. You know, he had like a series
oh,
of
yeah,
bells.
Yeah, yeah, he did have that, didn't he? He did have the bells,
But he was just like a little boy himself who set
if
up
he wasn't a nonce, there's a lot of coincidences.
Little boys. Don't
him.
Even little boys don't fuck other little boys though, do they?
Oh God, man! I was really thought this one we got through about 50 minutes without mentioning pedos.
When I was a little boy, I never once. You know what I mean? It's like
I mean, like yeah. Did you ever have like whenever I hear stories of like young lads being like, oh, me and all, but when we were like 13, we'd put on some porn, we'd all have a wank. What are you doing? Like soggy biscuit and that. That never happened with me.
It blows my mind.
Yeah.
It's such a common story.
I'm gonna be quiet through this one.
Status Quo used to like this is right. I saw an interview with Status Quo once where they were like, what are some wild stories from the road? And they were like, oh, once, right, we got a projector and projected porn onto a building opposite our hotel, and we all sat in a room and have a wank together.
So it's like, that's not a rock and roll story at all.
No, that's four middle-aged dudes having a wank in a travel lodge. That's just sad.
Having a wank with your mates. It's disgusting.
Wild days, mate.
Yeah, and it's not just any mates. Your mates are the other members of Status Quo. You've got to remember this.
Oh, that's gross, man.
Fucking knocking one out with Rick Parfitt, Jesus.
That is, that is not... that's not on, is it?
No, I've always kept it a solo activity.
Definitely.
Personally.
It's because it's shameful.
Well, it should disgusting. Be if you do it right.
It's part of the fun.
You've got to get into all your gear, innit, before doing it.
Yeah, I'm not taking all my props to a fucking
you've
hotel.
You've got to be mortified if you get caught. That's the type of wanks I like.
Yeah, have you ever been caught?
Have I?
I have actually, yeah, once.
Where? Who by?
My girlfriend. I was the computer's there in front of me. Here, and the hallway is on the right of the computer.
Yeah.
So you've got good vision. It's right down there. Mm. Yeah. So it's the hallway's dark. So she had the whole walk of the hallway and then appeared at the light. And I just, as I was knocking one out, and although she, you know, I was with her for years and like, I shouldn't have been in, I just had to laugh it. Mm. I just literally just cried laughing.
Yeah.
But she walked over to the tea and started making tea. But she was
stirring
confused.
Tea.
Why was
it? It wasn't fun. It was like, she was just making a tea, like just a bit confused about it.
About what she'd seen. Did she see what you were looking at?
It's awful.
Did she see what you were watching?
I mean, it was pretty standard stuff. It weren't like,
it was regulation gear.
I mean, that is definitely a big factor in it. If you,
yeah,
no one's being suffocated.
Yeah.
but it is a little bit of jealousy about what you're watching, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you get caught, I think for some people,
definitely. Yeah.
Like I got caught by one.
But it was the only time I've ever been caught.
Well, like, I got caught by a flatmate once when I was at uni. Like, just walked into my room in the middle of the afternoon.
He woke up.
Yeah, but like, I had caught him a couple of weeks previously, so I don't know if it was like a revenge mission.
Oh, definitely. He was. Yeah. He had a stethoscope against your door.
Yeah, he was fucking weird. He was a fucking right mad con. I fucking hated living with him. He would sing constantly. He was like a fucking music student. And he'd sing every morning really loud. Sit his piano and sing so loud. It was like a house I'd moved into with people who didn't know. And then, like, when I called him out on it, he was like, but my singing is social. Everyone enjoys it. And I went, I hate to fucking break this to you.
Oh, mate.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, that God.
That was when I was
my
depressed.
My singing
I had to
is
leave
social.
There. Oh, my God. What a cunt he was. If you're watching, by the way, you're still a cunt. God, I fucking hated that.
I lived with Faye Tracy, who's a lovely human being.
Yeah, I love Faye.
And she's a great singer and she can play music. Yeah. But we'd wake up in Edinburgh and she'd be playing the carrot, just practicing.
Playing a carrot?
Like the butternut squash. It was quite a cutting sound.
You're not allowed to play vegetables in the morning in Edinburgh.
It was
mate.
A part of her show, so she'd be practicing.
Okay.
But it was quite a, like a Donald Duck kind of sound.
Can I stand next to a fucking bagpiper? Like, there's enough cunts making noise at the Edinburgh Festival. You don't need a carrot player in your fucking kitchen, do you?
It's a funny one, that Edinburgh. Like, because it's Edinburgh, obviously, everyone's tired and emotions are high. So things like can just annoy you. I say, like, Faye's lovely. Like, just the nicest person can annoy you. I once
Yeah, but Mother Teresa could be playing a carrot while I'm asleep and I'll be fucking furious.
But even what I mean is that it'll be heightened by the Edinburgh
Fringe. Yeah.
I once
And as the Edinburgh goes on, like middle of week two or three, just like,
oh, that's when things start really fraying. Fucking,
my first ever proper Edinburgh, 2006. Yeah. I went and did the Free Fringe, I was in a house. Me, Chris Martin, I think it was Benny Boot, it was Sean James, and it was Yanni Ajizlu, and it was just like, it's Sean had sorted the
Ajizlu.
House. Ajizlu, is that how you say it? I think that's how you say his surname.
No idea. I'm not even going to attempt
for
it.
Years, actually.
I call him Yanni.
Yeah. But he was a real early morning guy. And I was
excuse for it in a comedian.
My first ever Fringe. I was out all night, just shit-faced. The gigs were like fun, but they were sort of, I was just this little, I was like a kid caught up in something I'd never experienced before. Mm. And like every morning I'd sort of roll into the kitchen, I'd be like deaf, and I'd sit at a table and Yanni would be there eating his cereal, and he was always chipper and really nice and like, hey, yeah. And then basically every morning I think I just looked at him like I was going to murder him, right? And after about 5 days, he was trying a bit out from his set, like his show he'd written.
Oh.
He started trying it on me while eating cereal and he was all happy and chatting. And I swear, I must have looked at him so aggressively.
He deserved it, to be fair.
Because he was on a different, at that point, he was happy and up and ready and to go. And I was just sad and depressed and like hungover. And
like a comedian.
He stopped and went, Carl, mate, I think we need to have a chat. And I was like, what? And he went, look, I know you don't like me. He just gave me this proper talking to him. Like, I know you don't like me, but we're living together, so I think you should make an effort. And he gave me a real talking to. And I had to basically say to him, look, mate, I do like you, but it is the morning and I have physically not got any endorphins in my brain. Yeah. So I don't have the ability to smile right now.
Yeah.
And I said, that's nothing to do. It's just you're happy and up and I'm not yet. And it was totally just a different wavelength thing.
Yeah, no, but that's brutal. There's nothing more annoying than someone being happy when you're hungover.
I know.
And then confronting you.
But to his credit, it basically had been like a week I was
very
rude.
Honest of him, innit?
Like, I mean, I had been rude every
it's
morning.
It's better than doing that than kind of bitch about you down the meadows or something. In the loft bar. Oh, here he's coming. He's coming anyways.
Oh yeah, how's the show going? Good numbers. No, I was like that. That's how I did Edinburgh for a number of years, was just drink every day, all day, every day. And then, yeah, you see the people like, because there's like two shifts, isn't there? There's all the people who get up in the morning, have a green tea and go to the gym.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, those people can fuck off. Like,
well, they're the people that are doing like 8 shows in a day and they're like, yeah, well, show's a kid's show at 11.
I was doing 6 shows a day starting at 1 p.m, but then I was drinking every day as well. And I did an Edinburgh once.
Well,
where
like some of them were like compilation shows.
Yes, like I was doing compilations and double headers. So I was doing about 3.5-4 hours on stage every day.
Yeah,
like I was drinking a bottle of whiskey a day as well,
and not any other gigs.
Yeah,
and then, Julia, you weren't doing over 30 minutes.
I was doing my Edinburgh 33 minutes, and then coming home. I did come in at like 36 once.
Oh, that's so for an hour.
I mean, it weren't the best. I went over a few times, to be fair.
Yeah, have you ever had like a proper bad on the run like that? My first ever 20 minutes, I did 12 because I was dying so hard. I was supporting Chris Ramsey in Newcastle at a secret gig at the Stand, and they did not want to see me. Jason Cook was emceeing. So it's like Geordie legend, like going to introduce another Geordie legend. And they go, before that though,
I've got some prick.
And like Jason had seen me do 10 and assumed I was dead good because my 10 was fire, but I did not have 20 at that point. Shit. So I just...
That happened to me early on, getting weekends based on a 10-minute set. And I'm like, nah, it's so tight. My 10, like this couldn't even be 12, you know what I mean?
Unless, I totally had that.
And I underrun so much.
You just do each joke with a 20-second interval after it.
I would. And that's where I got my pause in. Like, I'd pause between jokes.
Just out of necessity.
Until the laughter stop and then start another joke. I was so nervous all day, man. But yeah. I just blagged it after. I said, oh, did I? My watch stopped. And then the next night, I'm back there. And I did the same thing.
Watch is still broken, mate.
Oh, well, no, it happened again. And he pulled me to one side and had a little word, mate. You can't do 14 minutes.
No.
When you booked for a 20.
It's the only rule, isn't it? It's the only rule, do your fucking time.
I know, but not. I do think there's a sort of window in it. Like, if you smash it for 18, they ain't going to say a word.
18's all right,
smash it for 22, they ain't going to say a word.
I think you've got like 10% leeway, haven't you? It's like definitely a speeding ticket.
But yeah, if you even if you smash it for exactly, 15, they're going to be like, that was a bit short. And if you go to 25, they're going to probably say...
Oh, I've had it, though, where I've come off at 19 minutes 30 and I had someone be like, you ran under.
Oh, yeah, I've had that.
Do you want me to do a 30-second joke?
Like, there is a promoter that is really tight on that. Yeah. Somebody came off once. I won't name because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But
which means he gives you work.
Exactly. But he sent them back on to like finish a couple of minutes.
Fucking teacher making you do.
Oh, you gotta go back on with your tail between your legs. Oh, imagine how brutal that would be.
Sorry, guys, I just gotta do a couple more minutes. I don't think audiences care about time as much as promoters think they do.
No, and like audiences think they care about time as well. Whenever you do like a private event, they always go, oh, can you do an hour or can you do 45 or whatever? And you've always got to argue them down. And then when you end up eventually doing half an hour, it's like, it's 10 minutes too long, wasn't it? Yeah, that's what I've been trying to tell you. Yeah, 20 minutes in and out. There's a reason for the 20. It's a sweet spot.
Right, I've seen the time. We've been rattling on for ages. We should probably wrap things up.
It's been a joy.
It's been really fun, man. Thanks for coming on.
It's quite all right.
We've tried to sort it a few times, and we keep having to rearrange. Yeah. We'll do the admin in our intros and stuff. But what? Where can people find you? You still doing your podcast?
Yeah, I'm all over the place, man. Like, I've got loads of shit going on. Like, best place is my YouTube channel, Rob Mulholland Comedy. I put up loads of stuff on there. When's this coming out, by the way?
End of next week, maybe.
All right, cool. So by the time this is out, go on my YouTube channel. There'll be a new half-hour special called Back on the Grass that I've just put out. It's coming out...
When did you record it?
In the little perineum between lockdowns, right? So like
perineum.
Yeah, put on a load of like DIY gigs. Area. Yeah, this is it. Like with me and Freddie Quinn, basically ran a load of gigs in the north. Like where I built a stage out of a pallet and got some lights and a PA, and we just turned up places and filmed all those gigs and sort of cut them together into this one like special for all these outdoor weird little gigs. So that should be out. So yeah, go on my YouTube channel, Rob Mulholland Comedy.
Cool.
I've got old podcasts and stuff. They're all on there. So that's probably the best way.
Excellent. Yeah. And Julian, any final admin we need to do? Just basically sign up to the Patreon for extra bits.
Patreon.com/WeTVI.
Yes. And that's it.
We put all the videos of the podcast earlier on there.
We'll be on the Patreon. So you can see Rob's lovely background. You can see
it's an excellent
unplayed guitar. You can see my Moses basket, double prams. There we
all
go.
The equip.
Yeah, exactly. Right, end of the podcast. Rob, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for coming, man.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time. Bye.
You actually changing the podcast.
Rob, he used to die of AIDS in an alleyway.